Old Bailey found the sewer folk with little difficulty, following his nose. He knew what he had to do, and he took a certain pleasure in making a bit of a performance of it, ostentatiously examining the dead cocker spaniel, the artificial leg, and the damp and mouldering portable telephone, and shaking his head dolorously at each of them. Then he made a point of noticing the Marquis's body. He scratched his nose. He put on his spectacles and peered at it. He nodded to himself, glumly, hoping to give the vague impression of being a man in need of a corpse who was disappointed by the selection but was going to have to make do with what they had. Then he beckoned to Dunnikin and pointed to the corpse. Dunnikin opened his hands wide, smiled beatifically, and gazed up towards the heavens, conveying the bliss with which the Marquis's remains had entered their life. He put a hand to his forehead, lowered it, and looked devastated, in order to convey the tragedy that losing such a remarkable corpse would be. Old Bailey put a hand in his pocket and produced a half-used stick of deodorant. He handed it to Dunnikin, who squinted at it, licked it, and handed it back, unimpressed. Old Bailey pocketed it. He looked back at the corpse of the Marquis de Carabas, half-dressed, barefoot, still damp from its journey through the sewers. The body was ashen, drained of blood from many cuts, small and large, and the skin was wrinkled and prune-like from its time in the water. Then he pulled out a bottle, three-quarters filled with a yellow liquid, and passed it to Dunnikin. Dunnikin looked at it suspiciously. The sewer folk know what a bottle of Chanel No. 5 looks like, and they gathered around Dunnikin, staring. Carefully, self-importantly, he unscrewed the top of the bottle and dabbed the tiniest amount on his wrist. Then, with a gravity the finest Parisian parfumier would have envied, Dunnikin sniffed. Then he nodded his head enthusiastically and approached Old Bailey to embrace him and conclude the deal. The old man averted his face and held his breath until the embrace was concluded. Old Bailey held up one finger and tried his best to mime that he was not so young as once he was, and that, dead or not, the Marquis de Carabas was a bit on the heavy side. Dunnikin picked his nose thoughtfully, and then, with a hand gesture indicating not only magnanimity, but also a foolish and misplaced generosity that would obviously send him, Dunnikin, and the rest of the sewer folk to the poorhouse, he had one of the younger sewer folk tie the corpse to the bottom half of the old perambulator. The old roof man covered the body with a cloth, and he pulled it away from the sewer folk across the crowded deck.
One portion of vegetable curry, please, said Richard to the woman at the curry stall. And, I was wondering, the meat curry, what kind of meat is it then?
The woman told him.
Oh, said Richard, right. Just better make that vegetable curries all round.
Hello again, said a rich voice beside him. It was the pale woman they had met in the caves, with the black dress and the foxglove-coloured eyes.
Hello, said Richard, with a smile. Oh, and some poppadoms, please. You, here for curry?
She fixed him with her violet eyes and said, in mock Bela Lugosi,
I do not eat curry.
And then she laughed. A lavish, delighted laugh, and Richard found himself realizing how long it had been since he had shared a joke with a woman.
Oh, Richard Mayhew.
He stuck out his hand. She touched it with her own hand, in something a little like a handshake. Her fingers were very cold, but then, late at night, at the end of autumn, on a ship out on the Thames, everything is very cold.
Lamia, she said. I'm a velvet. Ah, he said, right. Are there a lot of you?
A few, she said. Richard collected the containers with the curry in.
What do you do? He asked.
When I'm not looking for food, she said with a smile,
I'm a guide. I know every inch of the underside. Hunter, who Richard could have sworn was over on the other side of the stall, was standing next to Lamia. She said, "He's not yours." Lamia smiled sweetly. "I'll be the judge of that," she said. Richard said, "Hunter, this is Lamia. She's a Velcro."
"Velvet,"
corrected Lamia sweetly. "She's a guide."
"I'll take you wherever you want to go."
Hunter took the bag with the food in it from Richard. "Time to go back," she said.
Well, said Richard, "if we're off to see the you-know-what, maybe she could help."
Hunter said nothing. Instead, she looked at Richard. Had she looked at him that way the day before, he would have dropped the subject. But that was then.
"Let's see what Dor thinks," said Richard. "Any sign of the Marquis?"
"Not yet," said Hunter. Old Bailey had dragged the corpse down the gangplank tied to its pram base, like a ghastly Guy Fawkes, one of the effigies that not so very long ago the children of London had wheeled and dragged around in early November, displaying to passers-by before their flaming demise on the bonfires of the 5th of November, Bonfire Night. He pulled the corpse over Tower Bridge, and, muttering and complaining, he hauled it up the hill past the Tower of London. He made his way west, towards Tower Hill Station, and stopped a little before the station, beside a large grey jut of wall. "It wasn't a roof," thought Old Bailey, "but it would do."